You are now listening to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight, weekdays from 4:30 to 6, only on Eagle FM. Download the app or tune in to a frequency near you.
Should have been there.
Yeah.
I know. Good afternoon to you too.
Good afternoon to you too, guys.
Yeah.
You should have been there as well. Don't worry.
I know. Now,
ask the question, Helmut. I don't know why you're smiling.
No,
you're smiling so broadly, but ask the question.
No, I'm smiling for several reasons. One is, well, because today's Friday. Mm. Two, it's because, well, today's topic is about netball. Yay!
What? What? Well, why are you saying yay about netball?
Yeah, look, I just never thought we'd be sitting here talking about netball.
Me too.
Yeah. Until you know,
it's actually a fun sport. I've played it before. As a man.
I don't think I've played netball, though. I've played several sports.
We were made to play it by our rugby coach. He was complaining about some of the guys not having ball skills.
Really?
Yeah,
like jumping.
No, not the jumping. Passing, catching, and being able to just be aware for the potential pass, you know, to come into existence or to, you know, to be in motion.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously one of the biggest differences, if people have ever played rugby, you know, I'm talking about our listeners out there, is that there's always been the evolution of the 90s when the game became professional into now, you know, when it's at its hyper professional stages and they're arguing about whether or not Red Bull must invest in the sport or not. Another completely different discussion. But at that stage, there was a great split, Helmut.
Yeah.
Between Northern Hemisphere rugby and Southern Hemisphere rugby. And obviously Southern Hemisphere led by South Africa, New Zealand and Australia. They had this brand. You know, it was flowing. It was hard. It was athletic. It was entertaining. And you had your heroes, and when you had to watch Northern Hemisphere rugby, you were, you know, you were going like, it said, do these guys know how to pass? They can run, but do these guys know how to pass? And they were more tactical, and with us, in Southern Hemisphere, it was tactics and tactics, athleticism, and, you know, finding the opportunity and the luck.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when it comes to netball, as an under 13 rugby team, the Henry, both our coach told us, hey guys, for today, the girls will be playing your sport, you guys will be playing their sport, and we were told, and our coach also saw it as an opportunity for us to learn, you know, to sort of like, top notch our ball handling skills. I don't know why he took that pot shot at us, because primarily, you know, so at that stage as a 13 year old, you know, you're slightly obnoxious because you go like, but what's wrong with us? But you're not the coach standing on the sideline watching you guys going like, what are these kids doing?
Like, what am I doing wrong?
Yeah. So, at that stage, it was just a bit of an annoying sport because of the catch and stop. But it's literally the same theory in rugby. You get tackled, that ball goes to ground. It starts a set piece and a phase. And then you've got to move on. So, It has, rugby and netball have similarities with each other in terms of how the ball game flows. It's just with netball, it's slightly more physical than basketball.
Oh yeah, that
is. If any of the men who love basketball did not know this, in netball, yeah, you can get a shoulder bump and the ref just goes like, fair competition, open play. What happened? Your feet are slippery. Stuff like that happens. So, yeah. We're talking about netball. How much you wanted to ask a question?
I have a ton of them. Like,
just don't ask me the rules and how to play the game.
No, forget the rules. Yeah. Now, I'm not looking at it, from a netball standpoint, even though today's discussion is based on of what's going on in the netball sphere.
Yeah.
With regards to, especially, this just locally here in Namibia, with regards to the discussions around its professionalization come and its next season. That's next year.
Mm.
Yeah. Which is why after when we were, exchanging the information on the, you know, basically exchanging the information on, you know, on the description. The, you know, remember the first question I asked, because I've been living my whole life thinking that we have a bunch of professional sports in Namibia.
You're not the first person to ask me that question today.
Thank
you. After I wrote that description, and after I proposed that subject to you yesterday.
Yeah.
I think it was our other colleague, Ivan, and yeah, Ivan also asked me, isn't our football professional? It's not.
Thank heavens.
Our football is not professional. Our football is like semi-amateur. Now, semi-amateur is below semi-pro.
Now, this is where now, this is where the questions are coming from. Like, how many levels are they to professionalization? Because to some of us that, let me just say, to people like me that don't, that don't participate much in sport, let alone understand the lingo. As soon as I see, as soon as I see big names like, big names like Shalulile, and, I'm watching all this, like, what was that last year with the newspaper cup? And you have, all these guys, basically, doing what they do best on the pitch. I'm like, okay. As soon as I see, I see it on TV or read about it in the paper, I conclude professionalized.
Okay. Now, here's something. When you watch it on the TV.
Yeah.
And the difference of watching it from South Africa on the TV. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's stay at Shalulile.
Yeah.
South Africa's close. So Shalulile gets 300. The lowest he got was 300,000 Namibian dollars per month.
Holy cow.
Since he joined Mamelodi Sundowns, it was bumped up to 500,000 a month. Because it also includes CAF Champions League matches and other particular cup competition matches that he, if he's fit enough to participate in.
Yeah.
That's just the South African and African men's football ecosystem. I also have to put in a little bit of a bookmarker or like a peg just to indicate the difference in terms of what Namibia's netball will be getting to.
Mm-hmm.
Namibia's netball, and for anyone that has read the article in this week's, the Village e-paper, so I'm talking about Wednesday's edition, is that obviously MTC's, Timikandra cited that, taking the partnership between netball Namibia and MTC further, their aim is to bring in an allowance system that will compensate the players every month with a specific fee for participating. And this is across if you are a team with X amount of players. It's not just about the players on the pitch. It's the players that you have on your roster. And each player will get said particular compensation aspect. Now,
is that the amount I had in the audio?
Yes, and the amount that you would have seen in the article in terms of that was, in the e-paper on Wednesday. 500 does not sound like much, Helmut. But, okay, ad break before we come back.
There's no price like the ShopRite price. That's why we're committed to bringing you lower prices on all the essentials you need. Like 40, 42 or 44 Lovies disposable nappies. All variants for only 139 Namibian dollars 99 per pack. And 500 grams Romy 37% fat spread for only 14 Namibian dollars 99. Never pay more than the ShopRite price. Valid until 19 October 2025. Only at ShopRite. Catch Ready Steady Cook on One Africa. Proudly brought to you by ShopRite Namibia.
Welcome back. So we continue. 500 bucks does not look like much.
Yeah, it doesn't look like much, but we have to understand, Helmut. When I stood there Saturday, and I obviously heard now the closing ceremony speeches. So this is about the regular netball season, guys, that recently ended. And obviously the champions of this regular season was Namibia Correctional Services. It's not the first time. that salaried people play sport. You know, they also do this in football, but you see it more in rugby and in netball. So, I mean, there was an old team when I grew up in the 90s, Helmut. There was a team that was just made up of Trans-Namib rugby players, guys that work for Trans-Namib. And its name was even Trans-Namib rugby team. Yeah, it was the club's name.
I haven't been to that club.
They had to rechange its name because I saw them later on when I played for at that stage before we became NUST, before it became NUST, when we were still Polytechnic and I played for Polytechnic but I also moved from Western Suburbs to Polytechnic to do that. It's not like a transfer system. You just decide, nah, I'm not here anymore. And then you just walk across the yard, across the road and you go like, hey guys, I'm joining you guys. Because players used to do that a lot. Because it's not pro, you know. If you don't like the atmosphere at one club, you can just say, "Hey guys, take your stuff, go fly where the sun doesn't shine, and I'm crossing the road over here."
Yeah,
and that happened a lot. So when we started that Polytechnic Rugby Club situation, one of the first teams we had to compete against was known as Windhoek Rugby Club, here in the Pioneers Park area. They were not based at the Wanderers. Wanderers had its own club, and United has its own club. So Windhoek Rugby Club was then this new club that popped up, and them and the other guys that also came along with us from Kommersdal, the Cats, and there were all these particular things. But primarily at that scenario, what I'm indicating to you was the community input into doing something. Now, this is where I love Namibians, Helmut. You as a Namibian, you don't need to wait for the government to start anything. You can do something just like that. You don't need permissions. You don't need to go and pay for a fee. Yeah, maybe if you're going to use...
You need permissions.
If you're probably going to use a municipal field
or
school field or something like that.
Yeah.
You're going to ask permission somewhere. But in many cases, Helmut, people just rock up and they start playing. They just rock up and they start, you know, doing the thing. Now, at the heart of everything... That's obviously how much of Namibia's sports, the sports culture, came to Namibia. That's how it came to Namibia. Now, we are trying to tap back into a nostalgic fear we had in the 90s and the 2000s and the 2010s. But you can clearly see it has fizzled out.
Yeah.
And you can clearly see that these are the things that MASAC and even NDP6... And even the president's speech from 21 March is trying to grapple at. Let's get that sports, let's tap into that sports culture, that sports economy. But the damage has been done for so far, so long.
Mm.
And I truly mean it, Helmut. We had a feeding system. We had a feeding system from school to high school, from primary school to high school to club to national team.
So it basically had the equivalent of what would be described as a supply chain from raw material to finished product.
And you're talking about athletes.
Yeah.
You had athletes from school, primary school, high school, there was no universities because UNAM at that stage was, no one thought, you know, was actually, you know, doing any sports programs until the sports club of UNAM was, the rugby club of UNAM was started by former players from Rehoboth Rugby Club and Falcons Rugby Club from Rehoboth. Because when UNAM opened up its campus and they got that sports field, they decided, you know what, let's start this club. Because some of them were either working at UNAM or some of them were actively, you know, were students at UNAM, were part of the first, you know, the first enrollment batches of UNAM. Because UNAM moved from where Polytechnic or NUST is today, the upper campus, UNAM moved from there to that spot. And this is in the 90s. And then Polytechnic was started over there. That's now, and if you did not know, before we had universities in the 80s, that complex where NUST is based was actually the teachers' college. The old Windhoek teachers' college that was moved to Kommersdal, where you've got the UNAM campus in Kommersdal.
Oh.
It's the old teachers' college, supposedly. I'm just citing you the facilities history base.
Yeah.
Now, Namibia had, through its established school networks, it had established athletics and sports programs. From what I heard from parents, some parents now actively, because those parents in many cases were not athletes, didn't play any sports. In some cases, they're not transmitting the same, the same enthusiasm for the children to pursue, sports activities. The stories are rife, in terms of if people have ever heard of it, specifically those that used to play rugby, soccer, hockey, cricket, tennis, anything, netball in Windhoek and the towns that had strong sports cultures on the school levels. The stories are rife of, you know, that the sports programs just died away. Now, we had the feeding system. The interesting thing that obviously still exists is that we still have a strong netball feeding system. So let me say it again. A strong netball feeding system.
compared to other sport codes.
Exactly. People might not just not know about it much, but we, I think every year we still successfully send like an under 19 or it's a below 20, 21 year old team. We still send a team to, you know, various particular competitions.
Mm-hmm.
I know that in the world now, obviously, I just want to get the global, the sports body, the global sports body's name. I don't know if it's World Netball or something. But yeah, World Netball, that's the sports body's name. They're obviously trying to encourage, they call it elite leagues around the world. These are, they look pro because it says here that the, in the UK and in Australia, New Zealand, they're trying to get these sort of like, pro leagues going. The summarized version that my AI is throwing out here for me for some reason is that the Australians have a pro league, the British have a pro league, the New Zealanders have a pro league, and other notable leagues obviously come from, remember this is predominantly former British colonies that play the sport. Just so that you know. Former British colonies. So you can see the strength where, you know, the British were. So South Africa obviously has also ignited something, in Southern Africa. And there's also like a major African presence. Because you've got Nigeria, you've got Malawi. Apparently Malawi is like in the top 10. Namibia is number 15 women's in the women's game. Malawi is above us. Malawi is a lesser developed country than us. just to let you know. Uganda, I think Uganda is also above us. They're like in position 12 or 13 ahead of us. So there is strong competition for the sports code. If people were asking, you know, what does the global appeal for the sports code look like? And remember guys, it's just women. It's just women. And I'll tell you today, it's more entertaining than basketball. I'm really sorry for any of you guys that are pro basketball. Netball is more entertaining than basketball.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one.
It's not just, you know, in terms of obviously just because it's just women playing. If you watch the game, Helmut, it would have made it lovely if they had a bouncing factor to their dribbling and movement.
Like basketball.
But like a one-time bounce. You know, not like continuous bounce, just a one-time bounce.
Oh.
The obvious thing is that it's a very physically demanding sport. It's a small court. We all know how basketball feels like for those of us who ever played basketball. It's just that the ball is not as heavy as basketball. And obviously you've got a different kind of a hoop system that is not as high as basketball, slightly lower, because you don't have to jump. Mm-hmm. The only jumper there is while you're in the movement of play. And if you're the defending guys, you know, in the goal zone, you can actively try and jump just in front of the line of sight of the person. Getting to that scenario. Now, I'm done explaining the rules and the other semantics around the sport. Getting to the scenario of what...
That has always confused me.
Yeah.
You know, I go there and expected them to have numbers on their back, and then I get there and find letters.
And then like, you see letters, GD, so forth. It illustrates the positions. You get goal defender and goalkeeper, GK, GD. Those guys specifically just stay in that goal zone because they're the only two guys literally defending that goal zone. But alongside of them are literally the two attacking players from the attacking team. And they are also the only two guys that you can allow to score. So it also shows a lot of restrictions on the game of play. But it makes things fun. You know, if you impose restrictions on movement, on positions, you should see the tactics that come out of that. Which is obviously fun things to see. It's similar to hockey. Many people don't know if they had to probably put a hockey player right next to a football player. Yes, a football player runs a lot more on a bigger surface area. In some cases, they sometimes cover up to 10 kilometers in a match. That's what footballers cover. Soccer players.
Of running.
The English footballer is known as the footballer in the world that runs the most in a match. So they track you in terms of, you know, and you have to be running, jogging or running. Hockey has the same particular elements. in terms of like in football. So, but hockey's field is smaller.
Yeah.
But you are running.
A lot.
You're running a lot. You can lose the ball here and then you have to sprint back, literally back. And it's just like 100 meters. You'd literally have to sprint back to head to this direction. So, many people would think that $500 doesn't mean anything. $500 actually counts a lot. It's a starting spot. Now, there's one interesting thing that was highlighted specifically in that closing ceremony of speeches is that it seems like that the stakeholders are happy with how the sport is being managed.
Yeah.
And with how the sport is technically being coached and the interest rate, the interest level from former players of the sport being coaches and trying to be administrators and also obviously trying to, you know, you have to also, what they call that thing, develop your own referee program. Because the downside was, Helmut, the end of season round took place at the Commercial Stadium at an open air setting. It's open air courts. You can ask me what's wrong.
Because you lost me.
Okay, so what's wrong is that you can obviously see the lack of investment in the sport.
It's one of the sports that are supposed to be not under open air facilities.
Yeah. World Netball has now moved that if you want to be considered a country in terms of advancing a specific sport code, your local sports authority should have invested in a indoor facility. So now, Joanne Manuel from the Ministry of Education, Innovation, Youth, Sports, Arts and Culture. Whew, that name.
Mesa could have been easy, but yeah. Okay.
But yeah. So Joanne Manuel, she's the director for sports in the ministry, cited that the ministry bought a sprung board. So a sprung board, I don't know if you've ever seen a boxing ring. No, not a boxing ring, a WWE ring.
Yeah.
Have you realized that it has like a
yeah, like it's like
a spring function.
Yeah.
Now, it's a similar technology, but apply it to a netball court. So
one big pitch to spring load.
Remember, Helmut, it's a hard court. And these ladies this past weekend were playing on a concrete floor.
Oh, man. Okay, bring that one. But before continue, commercial break.
Sometimes you have to raise a Vinduk beer and say cheers to you, the real ones. You know, the ones who save you a spot for the game when the bar is crowded. The ones who offer to drive for the night to keep everyone safe. The ones who bring you a cold Vinduk beer without being asked. When they're there for you in ways you never knew you needed, they aren't just friends. They're the real ones. So cheers to them. Vinduk, 100% real beer for real people. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
You are now listening to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight, weekdays from 4:30 to 6, only on Eagle FM. Download the app or tune in to a frequency near you.
Welcome back. We continue. So, looking at the surface area of a WWE ring, and then
the have you ever seen them? Sort of like there's like a bouncing.
I'm saying it looks like it's spring loaded somehow.
It is.
Yeah.
So, okay, in the WWE function.
Yeah.
For anyone that's watched it, is that that's obviously to cushion any
the falling impact.
Any falling impacts. So that the wrestler, the athlete, doesn't get any adverse injuries because of if it was just a hard floor, your body has to take that shock. But actually that the shock is actually transmitted into a spring function and that the floor catches that shock.
Mm-hmm.
So you actually try to mitigate certain particular aspects. Obviously
injuries associated,
Yeah, the biggest injuries that many of the wrestlers suffer off from, especially the male wrestlers, is knee injuries.
Hang on a second.
It's still not a cushion. It is slightly cushioned with that spring function.
Is that why John Cena seemed to walk the way that he does?
His injury is actually knee injuries. That's why also why he wears the knee guards. That's also why Triple H wears knee guards. He doesn't must wrestle anymore, Triple H.
Yeah.
But most wrestlers, they always wear a knee guard, primarily because of, you know, it's just about looking after your kneecaps primarily and your ligaments. Because obviously, the moment you hit a certain age range as an athlete, your body starts losing calcium in your bone structure. That's why they're also advising drink more calcium, eat more yogurt, drink more milk, all those things. But nonetheless, now, World Netball is obviously citing in terms of requirements and standards that if you want to become a country that is playing and attracting international matches and you're trying to improve your status, because the next level is for the ladies also to try and compete in the Commonwealth Games for next year. They have a match in next month or end of this month, in a qualifying match to play in the Commonwealth Games of next year, because it's not in the Olympics yet. Because Olympics says you can't have a discriminatory program. You can't just have a women's only sport or a men's only sport. You must have a... gender balance sport.
Like male only, female only, and a hybrid of one sport go to something?
No. What they say is that if you have a sport, you should have a men's version and a women's version.
Oh, you so can't you, just have one that's...
Yeah, you okay. can't just, yeah, you can't just say, no, it's just a women's sport coming into netball. Because then the men and the men's, the rugby team, the men's rugby, the rugby body can then argue, but then we can, then you can advocate for rugby only to be men and football as well. So you must have a men and women's function to your sport. So.
Yeah, that's fair.
But that is only, Olympics is only going to see netball apparently in 2032. Not anytime soon. So 2032 then. However, we've laid now the aspect in terms of identifying that this sport code that my mother played, you know, also played when she was a schoolgirl, and many other women in the, across the Namibian landscape had, at one other stage participated in, is now finally also getting a piece of attention, Almut. Because we do have an opportunity for women to also, you know, I don't want to say prosper, but to have an, at least some designated national... Not triumph, but I'm calling it like prestige, you know, like national prestige in the sport, which has been in Namibia for 50 years, more than 50 years. So when you look at this particular sport, yes, to me it sounds good, building them a national facility. Slightly perturbed that the ministry had to go and spend the money to buy the springboard facility, because I know what happened the last time the ministry was in charge of facility. Brave Warriors is now playing in Botswana.
Not good precedents.
Not a good precedence. Or good precedent. Obviously, you know, you can say what you want about cricket Namibia and rugby Namibia, or the Namibian Rugby Union, which they own their two facilities. They own it. So it's privately owned. They own their facilities. Cricket Namibia obviously bought the two fields, where the stadium in now is, because tomorrow the Namibian men's cricket team is going to play against the South African men's cricket team, but it's like a select 11 or select team. So it's almost like not the full national team of South Africa, but it's like a team to sort of like inaugurate Namibia's, cricket stadium.
Mm-hmm.
Well, technically, it was inaugurated already when the women's qualifier tournament was held here in last month, when the Namibian women's cricket team entertained seven other African teams in terms of qualifying to another qualifying level, which will be held in the UAE for Namibia to try and qualify. This is the women's team to the World Cup in next year. I know it's a long road to freedom.
Yeah, it has to be if you're going to put all, you know, if you're going to put everything together in a sustainable way. And one thing that, every time that we come up with an initiative, especially on a national level, one thing that I'm always looking for is, how is the marketing aspect of it going? Because I remember last time we had, you know, we had this, a sports discussion here, And I remember clearly HD was here. And one thing that I came to actually learn that again easily, you basically reflect back that I did not know about sport was just how it's how it's massive of an industry on its own, to the way that basically on what has to all the pieces that must be in place behind the scene for you to bring about a match on the pitch.
Yeah.
And you are talking about, training, medications in, health professionals that must be involved, doctors and dietitians that have to be involved. And then you are looking at the marketing aspect of it. And that's one thing that was also mentioned in the, mentioned on the, in the audios that you shared. Bringing professional, sort of like a, let me call them professional because they did mention that graduate marketing individuals that will deal with the marketing aspect of things. And the sport itself has seen a significant significant increase in in audience or viewership. And now you have also the media also being congratulated, although they were awfully specific. I'm like, oh hey, if I were you, I would have gone, hey, I'm right here.
They were. It's a specific reason
why.
If you read my article, it's a specific reason I had to.
And like, hey, I'm right here, because they kept saying, oh, all these speakers would basically would not reach the the right audience if you guys were here as the media, and then the marketing graduates. I don't know, that's also awfully specific. Okay, so why not just get yourself some kind of a firm, but then a marketing firm, but then that also spells a lot of money. So I totally understand that. Budget constraints, blah, blah, blah. Now, the thing is, and also the fact that you just pointed out that I was not the first person to ask you, with regards to a lot of different sports codes practiced in Namibia, doesn't that mean they are professional? And he went, no, it doesn't. Then the question now popping up in my head is, how many ranks are they before you reach professionalization of sport?
Okay.
Because you did mention amateur. I'm like,
semi-pro,
okay, that's kind of insulting.
Semi-amateur. So currently, where Namibian sport find themselves, and I just had to, also just verify with another veteran of sports journalism in Namibia. Because I asked him earlier today.
Yeah.
Has our football ever been pro? And he said, no. Because he also sat there thinking, going like, but I asked him specifically, I'm talking about leagues, not about the national team. I'm not talking about Brave Warriors, and I'm not talking about the Velviches of the cricket team, and I'm not talking about the guys from the rugby team. I'm not talking about them. I'm not talking about you running out for the country.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about you in the club league system. The feeding system.
The sport itself.
Sport itself. The feeding system. And he said no. They tried. Some clubs tried. Our colleague earlier today, Ivan, also asked me, was our football never pro? I said, well, according to my recollection, no. They tried before COVID. There was a template that they tried. But it seemed like the moment COVID struck and the moment that particular internal dispute occurred between the NFA and the guys that were trying to establish the Premier League on itself away from the NFA's particular administrative micromanagement, let me rather call it that.
Questionable activities.
Because it led to court cases.
Yeah, it did.
And to FIFA disputes. Obviously the discussion there was one based upon who's trying to advance the benefits or the, or trying to achieve advancements to the benefit of the game in Namibia. It was a long politically charged potentially lie-induced process, that particular dispute that took place there in Namibian soccer. Because the way I saw it, no one was trying to tell the best kind of a story regarding the welfare of football in Namibia. rugby had also been there. Similar things. And obviously the indication coming from netball is that you have the single-minded approach. It's just women. Okay, there was one or two administrators which are men there in the sport, like a Commerce Regional guy, the guy that's also in the body of the sport, based there. He obviously also said something, but the key is that this is women driving a sport predominantly designated across the world just for women.
Yeah.
Now, if they're going to be part of the Olympic schedule of things in 2032, they have to introduce a men's side of the game. Just like rugby was forced to bring in a women's side of the game. The same too for football, to bring in a women's side of the game. And that obviously, as mentioned, you know, this is the inclusivity discussion about things. And yes, there might be a lot of men, there might be a lot of people out there who don't like the word inclusivity, who don't think that that word is also applicable in a country like Namibia or in the continent of Africa, but we actually do need a lot of inclusivity. You actually do need to motivate women and to encourage women to also expand their particular, what do you call it, their realm of seeing where they can also play a part in the rest of the country. It's not just about the economy. It's also about, you know, there might be something you like, and then if you're an athlete of the thing, you can be that sports hero who gets paid a salary for running around. Yes, your body can only hold out for so long. But yes, you can still at least try and make a living. Now, I'm still fixated, Helmut, on saying, please, guys, don't look at the 500 as something low.
Yeah, it's very easy to look at it from there. That's the problem.
Many people can.
That's where I started looking at it from.
Yeah. I was actually going like, hey, shorter. No, that's a good thing. Because you know what's the difference sometimes, Helmut?
Yeah.
In many cases, you always have to look at, in the club game of Namibia, look at the size of the teams on the pitch. Sometimes the guys, you can see sometimes who has access to money that can buy them food.
Yeah.
Or you can sometimes see some, those that actually had a growth stunt. They had stunted growth. Now, you and I know what is stunted growth.
Yeah.
It's in terms of the discussion from our food insecurity discussions we've done before. It's lack of food and lack of nutrients. And then sometimes the skeletal structure of the person cannot grow to its potential. So, there's also that scenario. Yes, you naturally get short people. No pun intended, Helmut.
Hey, it's not funny.
Hey, in sports terms, I'm technically also short.
Well, on the bright side, my bullies chasing me in school were amazed the spaces I would fit in.
Oh my.
They were all buffy. They couldn't fit in there.
That was
like,
not sport, Helmut.
I was you're
probably just talking about the best ability to bunk class. Eh?
Look, survival strategy. I had to work out.
You were just probably talking about the best ways of how to dodge the not so good societies on school.
I know. It turns out that's why they're, you know, they're everywhere.
Yeah.
Then they grow up to start, you know, calling hits on whistleblowers so they can buy Lamborghinis. Oh my God.
Who did you know, Helmut, that bought a Lamborghini?
There's one guy who's, you know, there's one South African guy who's, you know, implicated into in this whole
Mkwanazi.
Yeah, Mkwanazi story.
Yeah.
Well, because, you know, I think it was in November 2022 when I was reading a story from News 24 of one whistleblower who was investigating. Yeah, she was, she worked for the Tembisa Hospital for, you know, finance department.
Oh, it's the lady that was shot in
Durban. Yeah, Bobeta Diagrami.
Yeah,
who was shot, you know, at the entrance of a house. And the thing is, you know, this is where, you know, this is where the whole corruption discussion for me, you know, becomes very questionable one morally, because, you know, this guy is basically.
So you're talking about Ramaphosa's son. Ramaphosa's
nephew by marriage, yeah.
Yeah.
It's very easy to make assumption that, someone basically called a hit on someone so they can just splash money on their. Just to have access to money. Look, that's just diabolic on a whole another level. Yeah, they they managed to they found basically multi-million-dollar property. That's a house, and then they got a Lamborghini Urus is easy to, because it's an SUV version. Now the two, now on the other hand, one looked like Hurricane, and another one being an Aventador. Mm. And they're all in blue. And someone in the comment section of one of the videos typed, anyone want to guess this guy's favorite color? Yeah. So, now.
You know, the Lamborghini salesman did not complain.
No, he did not complain.
If it's Tembisa money or not.
Actually, that's none of his business.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's none of his business.
How you get that money is not.
It's just the irresponsibilities on the public official, public officials side of things.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, basically came to at least show to me that, again, for the millionth time, money is not a problem. It's not our problem.
Mm. Mm.
It's that just the management or the mismanagement thereof. Bring about now the discussion of, of incentivizing netball players or elevating the sport to the point, point of professionalization, the level of which I thought, the sport was, already was. And also, it's so much relief to learn that I was not the only one that thought that. A lot of relief. The reason why it's very easy for those of us that do not understand the sports lingo to assume that $500 is not a lot of money is you are looking at it from a point of view where each and every single professional, because it's very easy for us to look at professionals even in sports, all across all sport codes. And this is basically all around the world from UEFA, UEFA all the way to the Olympics. But let's just focus on, World Cup, UEFA and, type of level. When you look at the amount of money these guys receive, especially on a UEFA or Premier League level, it's easy to say, my God, that's a lot of money. But also you have to look at the amount of expenses that comes at being a player on that level.
Ah, there I stop you.
What?
There I stop.
How many doctors do you need? How many trainers do you need?
But it's not your doctors.
Nutritions.
But it's not your doctors.
All that is being taken care of by?
The club.
By the club.
Yeah. So it's not you.
So it's not your expenses. So you thank heavens.
Yeah. Even the accountant that gets assigned to you.
Yeah.
Because in modern football with the FIFA financial fair play thing or the UEFA financial fair play thing, those mechanisms, you get assigned an accountant.
Who is paid by the club?
Who is paid by the club? Yeah.
Do you have a doctor? Trainer. That's also. You have a coach.
No, those guys are employees of the club.
Employees of the club.
Yeah.
But
the accountants are like your assistant consultant.
Here's where I now come back to the word professionalization of a sports code now.
Yeah.
Because, a lot of us, including yours truly here, does not actually, first of all, understand what the term professionalization of a sports code means. Because, I'm pretty sure I'm not the only one who is learning all these things from, for you to professionalize a sports code, you need a body that takes care of all these things for the player. So I don't get in the
queue.
Yes
and no.
So I don't get in the queue for 10 hours.
So it's not just
and then
one
miss
body.
A match.
It's not just one body.
Uh-huh.
So it's technically a whole bunch of bodies. So.
But please elaborate.
You need a collective body that is like the chairman's club. Okay, I'll use the English Premier League format.
Yeah.
So you get the Football Association of England, the FA. They look after the sport in the UK, in England.
Everything sport, not just soccer.
The FA is just everything on the sport. So it's one sport.
Football Association.
Yeah. So I'm not talking about the Ministry of or the Department of Sport in the UK. I'm talking about the Football Association. Just looks after the sport.
Yeah.
But the Football Association has to divide itself away from the running of the actual leagues. in the country. So the English Premier League is a body on its own with its own CEO.
Yeah.
And in that body is the representatives of the clubs. Then separate from that is a chairman's committee, which are the chair people of these clubs.
What?
Yes. Separate from this, you get the lower leagues. So the championship has its own body of its directors that of each club, of the 24 clubs. And it's got a chairman's club running, sitting right next to it, like right next to the league body.
Yeah.
And this is based upon, and it's purely based upon the economics of each game. Now, where you end in a league, in the league body,
mm-hmm.
where you end in a league, your club, is based upon the payout, based upon the payout that you get from the TV deal. So if you are first, like, who was last season? Liverpool won that £70 million. If you were, who was the club that was relegated last year? One of the clubs. Let's say it's Leicester City. If you were Leicester City and you ended last, you get your £30 million. Even though you get relegated and you're bounced into the Championship League. And the three guys that got promoted from the Championship now enter into this new season. So now three new chairmans and three new directors join the structures in terms of the administration of the club, mm-hmm. of the league. In the club itself, you now, and this is where the professionalization thing come in. So you've got the doctors and nutritionists yeah. and data analysts and coaches and all those things are all there.
Data analyst.
So since this club is going to get all this money, this club has to appoint a whole bunch of backroom
data analysts
and support people. Yes. They are part of the coaching staff, the technical coaching staff. In Europe, your coaches are told you must get your licenses. So you have to go for UEFA training. So it's like workshops. It's like a 1 year course that you have to take. You have to get your multiple licenses. So it's your English Premier League license for the country you're in and to be in Europe. And then there's obviously a global one for you to be able to try and coach somewhere else. So if you see a European guy show up here and coach Namibia, the Brave Warriors,
mm-hmm.
that man has global certification to be appointed. He didn't show up with his CV and he told the NFA, hello, appoint me. No. The man has certifications. It's like a driver's license.
You didn't have to make it sound like that, but okay.
No, it has to be made like that, Helmut, because so that Namibians understand what goes into professionalization. What
Thank
goes
you.
Into commercialization. Because if you are talking about, hey, let's just throw money around to people and no one knows how to literally manage the project, you're going to sit with chaos. I've seen the chaos.
Yeah.
We've seen the chaos in the football. I've heard of the chaos in the rugby. We've seen the chaos. And Namibians actually want to see things really popping up. But here's the thing, Helmut. Here's the thing. The Namibian government does not own the sport. I'll say it again. The Namibian government does not own the sports. If we are part of a global body, any of those global bodies will tell the Namibian government, look, you can make that policy statement that people love saying, make the environment conducive. Sure. Yeah. Because apparently land was put aside to build this indoor facility for the netball. And then it wasn't explored upon what the issues were. And now new land had been designated again for this facility. But the floor, the sprung floor, like I mentioned, had been bought to obviously serve that particular purpose.
Yeah.
Now, another scenario obviously about this is one based upon who's going to carry the costs of this facility.
Not just construction, but also the upkeeps.
Maintenance and all that afterwards. Because like I said, the statement I made a little bit earlier, we saw what happened to Independence Stadium. Independence Stadium is still open for usage. I mean, if you want to do your athletics and stuff like that, you can still do that. But here's the downside, Helmut. It's not good enough And I'm now of the strong view that it's not good enough that we leave things up to a local authority and to a ministry to maintain a facility like a sports facility. And then we go make speeches after COVID by saying, hey, we want to co-host with Botswana the CAF African Cup of Nations. Mm. Just 2 months later for us to then sit with egg on our face saying, you know what, guys? And at that stage, when we made the announcement, we were songing, you know, we were doing this, you know, throwing our arms in the air just to 2 months later issue a statement.
Yeah, you know what? Issue a second thought.
And then the statement says, unfortunately not, guys. Do you know how that, in the global world, in the modern world, how that makes us look? Look, there's nothing wrong with saying, I wanted to, I don't want to anymore.
Chickened out.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong. Things happen. There's nothing wrong. I mean, in 2010, FIFA was running a backup program for in the event that South Africa cannot host the 2010 World Cup.
It's always good to have a plan B.
Guess who was South Africa's plan B?
Who was
it? Australia. They were, FIFA said if something happens to that World Cup in Africa,
Australia.
Shift it to Australia. Whether it's, and Eskom's issues now, didn't start in 2020. Eskom's issue started in 2008. Eskom's issue started there.
Yeah.
The what do they call that?
Load
shedding. Started there. FIFA was saying, if you can't keep lights on, our backup plan is Australia. Because it would be too short notice to give it to Morocco. But Australia has held rugby World Cups, cricket World Cups, and they've held an Olympics. And you just need 4 fields. You just need 4 stadiums. So Australia already had the facilities. So, when we obviously sit and look at a thing, and we holistically look at a picture, first and foremost, congratulations to the administrators of netball for reaching the point for harnessing and ensuring that the sport is still being, the flag of the sport is still being carried. I'm actually proud that to know that there is so many athletes in the public service who are actively doing the thing that I've seen before, you know, like friends, people that I've seen in communities who were 8-to-5 salary people literally doing and playing and keeping the sport going.
Pena humita, venga mo ondando da ShopRite. Oze, venga mo kukwetera ondando di ripevi ni pumbi o aiketo pumbu. Ngasho mina mozo, lo visa, hade kiro aki. Zidi mo mirongo ni, o mirongo ni, nambari nango mirongo ni nani. Mo maru zika yoroka, kesiro mirongo, ndatu no hoi, no senda o mirongo hoi no hoi. Osho wa okra, mo masere katano, zombo tayo romi, yo maga nini ripevi. Kotoro mlongo nani, no senda o mirongo hoi no hoi. Oshi ka unaku futa o shinji, shibule po ShopRite price. Zidi ko osigo logo no hoi na kotoba nuvo. Oko, ShopRite akuke. Endera opa mino ready, steady cook, ko one Africa. No ma panduro, ko ShopRite Namibia.
30 minutes past the hour of 5, or 30 minutes to the hour of 6. Home Run with Hemp and Dwight on Eagle FM. And I'm here learning a lot of new sports-related activities. When we talk about, you know, how to sleep longer and how to fall asleep faster, I'll be here explaining everything. I'm an expert at that.
How to sleep longer, Hamut?
Yeah, and how to, you know, fall asleep
faster.
Doesn't
your body tell you get up at some point with a headache? And hunger, shouting in your belly.
Do I?
Yeah.
I have cracked a lot of very dark jokes. One of them I told you. We're not going back there.
Not on air.
No, definitely not. The other one, I'm yet to tell you. Now, look, the thing
sorry
is,
for laughing, guys. I just heard the joke now.
Look, the thing is, let me just look again. I'm looking at this. I'm looking at this from an employment creation standpoint. Because again, every time that I look for after you explained basically like the structures that must be in place, how the club has basically run the whole show, it goes to indicate for me that
that's the micro level. The club.
you know, that's the micro level.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, you know, when it comes to basically, removing the burden off of the player. So that, because, when you're on the pitch, you have to be, you know, all hands on deck. Yeah. And you don't have, removing the burden of you having to worry about your 8 to 5 and, yeah. And also, you know, where my kids go to school, what am I, what am I taking home after this and all these things.
Mm.
Not just, personally, but also extending beyond that, we're talking about taking care of their responsibility.
Medical aid as well.
Yeah. Huh?
Yeah. Amut, did you think injuries caused are for free?
You and I, every Namibian, or more like everyone basically around the world, knows the difference in cost in cost of health expenses between public and private sector.
Yeah.
And also the efficiency and which ties into, a patient to health professional ratio among other things.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, that means if we're just, the netball discussion is a very good progress. It's a good progress. But, one joke that was also correct was that, ministry, we know that you have the money, please release the money. I was like, oh dear. But
that's like a shot in the dark. That's like, I am paying for $1 million, like some of the prayers I sometimes see on people's WhatsApp status. Please, dear Lord, I'm praying for $1 million. No, I don't know where it comes from. Just give me the $1 million. But we can't do shot in the dark analysis.
Now, one of the biggest question I can ask myself is if I was one of the netball players who are going to be benefiting from this very wonderful development.
Yeah.
What am I using this $500 for?
It's up to you, Ahmed. It's your money.
Hmm?
It's your money.
No, I'm just.
Now, what do you think would you have done if you were earning 500,000 rand?
500,000 rand?
Rand. What would you do with that money? Come on. But you're being told you can't drink alcohol, no parties at night, no weird stuff over the weekends.
Okay, no alcohol, no parties, I can do that.
Yeah.
Because I, you know.
But remember, many athletes are lowly educated. They didn't finish high school, or they finished high school. And they didn't go to university. So they don't have your level of concentration.
And most of them are party lovers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what do you think? Because one of the most famous things that I ever remember from the 2000s and the 90s, and even from the South African context, you know, some of the big football players like from South Africa, like if anyone knows Kaizer Chiefs, Jabu Pule.
Yeah.
Hamut, there were rumors in South Africa about Jabu Pule. He played for Kaizer Chiefs.
Yeah.
He was a Kaizer Chiefs fan. He got the opportunity of playing for Kaizer Chiefs. He showed up for Kaizer Chiefs. But you know, when you can see when someone's a drug abuser, have you ever seen someone, they don't look like they are high, but you can see this person there's something wrong in this person's body language.
I'm terrible at picking up at that.
There were rumors about Chabupule's drug addiction in Soweto, in Johannesburg, because of the money he's being thrown with. Then there obviously was, what was the other guy's name that had an alcohol? I almost said Steve Lekolea, but it wasn't Steve Lekolea. It was the other guy that played for Pirates, the guy with the Rastafarian, the guy with the dreads. I liked him because he was a midfielder, a very creative midfielder. They were all, there's no way a guy can stay skinny for that long with professional money and playing for South Africa.
So that means I have hope.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So the downside has always been in the human psyche that, you know, when people are exposed to a lot of money, potentially from a professional activity that their body is generating for them,
mm-hmm.
It's like the blinding lights syndrome, you know, the shiny light syndrome. People moving from rural areas to urban areas, they go like, no, the jobs are in the shining lights. They're over there. But you don't know what kinds of evils are there. And it's those kinds of troubles. But you are right. But just to set the scene there for you will not know what to do, Helmut, with $500,000 every month. Not even I will know what to do with that money. I would know by end of that year,
mm-hmm.
I would probably own already everything that I would want on a wish list.
So that's when it becomes a problem now.
But what do you do after that, after year one? And let's say your taxes take 100,000 from it.
Travel the world?
You can't. You're a pro athlete. You're already traveling.
You can't travel
in your season.
Off season?
Of course off season, yeah. But your off season is just a month.
Jeez, what am I doing with all this money?
And remember, you can only play at least, you can push your body until 38, 37.
So a lot of investments and savings.
That too. Even though the club, like in South Africa, the clubs take out insurance on you. So when you retire as a player, that insurance pays out and you get like a part of it because it was, the insurance was taken on you.
Mm-hmm.
So you get like, I heard. It's like you get like a part of that payment and then the club gets the other part.
So how many of us are looking forward to men's version of netball? I don't have the height.
What height, Helmut? You don't need height.
To participate in netball? And also just the sports itself. It's I don't know. Now, back to the question. Now, back to the question I asked you while we were on a break. If you look at, first of all, if you look at this whole, if I can call it elevation of netball to the professional level, it it's basically everyone's hope that's involved in, you know, in different sport courts to see their court also elevated to the same level. And, one thing that you can also see is that, there's an interesting collabo of public and private partnership going on in all this, you know, that's bring about this elevation. And that brings up the discussion of my God, this is one heck of an investment. Like, a processing plant in every constituency. You stand a better shot in promoting and investing in sports
in every constituency.
Yeah, than a processing. Yeah. Now,
a chance of employing more people quicker
than extraction, big time. And also in comparison, the level of investment required and the time frame it takes, you have a lot of advantages. There are two sectors, I think, that I think, I'm not an investment expert, but, prioritizing them would give us a lot of, would give us a lot of standing ground in terms of development. If one is tourism, the second is sports.
Here's the biggest thing, Hamut. My biggest headache as you and I are sitting here. And every time, sort of like a red flag pops up, every time we talk about sport and every time we talk about arts and culture,
what red flag?
I discover a new red flag that pops up because I immediately see where we will have an issue. This will be the biggest thing to overcome. But
in terms of sports development?
Yeah. But it would be a positive. The moment we solve it, you can immediately see the positives that accrue from this thing, that grow from this thing. The biggest concern, Helmut, is infrastructure.
Yeah.
Like this past
week. Not surprising. Our national team is not national.
This past weekend, Helmut, I now understand why we will need cheap and cost-effective electricity in Namibia. Why the nuclear power program is becoming an issue. And for Namibia cease to pursue a nuclear power program. Helmut, we can't be stuck in 1990. We can't be stuck in 2000. We can't be stuck in 1950.
Yeah, but look, nuclear power programs, if you are going with the, with the traditional nuclear plant, you need to locate it to, it's required that you locate it next to a large body of water because those those chimney type of structures that you see.
Yeah.
So technically,
if we have to put even
those are literally basically your chimneys because a lot of cooling is required.
Required, yeah.
A lot of cooling because.
But we must not pursuing it. Potentially.
No, if you are,
for our pocket.
I would not even recommend that if I was asked to pick one between a traditional nuclear plant and a.
An MSR.
Small modular reactors. Yeah.
SMR. So, for the the going rate.
Yeah.
Namibia's, for Namibia to get there, we would have to go for an SMR.
Yeah.
And the SMR would have to literally facilitate certain particular national needs. Look, Helmut, I now understand, and I actually reverse my previous comment that I had when the last time we talked about, you know, the developing the professional sports sector earlier this year. You remember when I complained about, was it Ondangwa or Ongwediva that wanted 200 million for a football field?
Yeah.
Actually, make that 200 million for a multi-sports complex. You've got a tennis court, netball court, you've got a basketball court, you've got a potential Olympic swimming pool facility, and then the football court facility, either football field facility. Why am I putting it like this? Well, let's imagine the scenario. There's probably not everyone that wants to just play football.
Netball or football.
Yeah. They probably would want something else. And potentially a swimming pool that can act like a public swimming pool facility for people. Instead of having to try and ask people to go and swim in the closest, you know, earth dam and stuff like that. But, you know, these particular kind of amenities and, you know, kinds of services that would obviously be owned by the local authority. Because the 200 alone, just for the field, I think is a bit heavy. It's a bit heavy. But if you made
it's a bit heavy, is in it too much?
200 million just for the just for a football field.
Uh-huh.
Just for a football stadium.
Yeah.
To me, Helmut, that just speaks of, but you're just promoting one sport.
Oh. Okay.
And that's not even a sport that's actually lighting Namibia's sports prowess. Yes, we're on the cusp until we lost last night against Liberia 3-1 on a dodgy field.
Dodgier than ours?
No, it's a artificial turf.
Oh.
And an artificial turf is the same turf that Sam Nyoma Stadium has. But you've got to ask yourself, for how long did our players not play on an artificial turf? Because in South Africa, they didn't play on an artificial turf.
In Botswana?
Botswana, they didn't play. They are not playing on an artificial turf. So you can obviously see, you know, also an adjustment to certain kinds of play areas or surface area play areas is also key. Now, if we take sports development further, I would love it to see sports teams actually invest in themselves. Ad break, guys.
Sometimes you have to raise a Vindhuk beer and say cheers to you, the real ones. You know, the ones who save you a spot for the game when the bar is crowded. The ones who offer to drive for the night to keep everyone safe. The ones who bring you a cold Vindhuk beer without being asked. When they're there for you in ways you never knew you needed, they aren't just friends. They're the real ones. So cheers to them. Vindhuk, 100% real beer for real people. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Heineken's iconic balanced taste. That gives you that refreshing first only made possible by Heineken's 5-star credentials. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
So, sports clubs investing in themselves.
Investing in themselves.
Like, okay, look, totally get that because
And we're not talking about them going to the closest company just for the fun of getting money.
And that.
No. They have to go and run their own marketing campaigns. That's where Mr. Ikanjo's comment in that
audio. Yeah, for getting marketing
about
graduates.
Getting third-year marketing students to intern for each of the clubs. Helmut, for the pro clubs in England and wherever, they've got multi-social media running accounts.
Not a WhatsApp group?
No.
Okay.
Not a WhatsApp channel even. And they've got a website.
And a Facebook page.
Facebook, Insta, they've got all that. And they're running their content. They've got a media presence.
Dedicated.
Because they know the English Premier League has fans around the world. And each club in the English Premier League has fans around the world. It's got a global merchant, a global commercial presence. That's why SuperSport buys TV rights to the English Premier League every year. And I just gave away the biggest commodity.
In sport.
In sport. It's TV rights.
Not the tickets.
Not the tickets. Not the fans. Not the merchandise at the club store. No. It's TV rights. If you want to pay them more.
How do you monetize that in Namibia?
It's intellectual property, Ahmed. You have an identity.
Yeah.
So, if you're an athlete, it's your identity.
You have to monetize, okay, you can monetize it directly or through the club.
Helmut, you are participating at the sports event.
Yeah.
You didn't call the TV station to come and record you.
You know, I met, you know, during the literary festival, I ran into one wonderful lady who came from the National Arts Council, who set us down and gave us one heck of a lecture about the available opportunities in the creative sector, and a bunch of my colleagues, not you guys here, the other side, started going, hang on a second, these things, you know, well, okay, hang on a second, you guys do these things, and I kept yelling at them, guys, it's on their website. Anyway.
Yeah, Hamoud. We in Namibia, we really have to move away from this, I'm doing this for the fun of it, mentality.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing also. Pre-independence, we were brought up with do this for the spirit of doing this mentality. We were literally brought up that way. It's a community issue. It's literally, and this is the reason why you even hear a lot of Namibians that would complain, yeah, we should have some sort of a socialism or socialist roots in our way of life everywhere. But here's the thing. You're not eliminating the price tag on a liter of milk in the shop.
No.
You're not eliminating it.
Unless you supply more of it.
Yeah.
Nothing
or
is happening.
You go and say there's a dispensary somewhere where someone is literally just giving away milk every day.
That's also unsustainable. Where is it coming from?
Exactly.
Because it's going to run out someday.
Exactly. And then you've got someone that comes and says, no, we must have jobs everywhere. Everyone must have a job. And you're like, that's unsustainable.
No, it can't.
Because we can't sit with perfections. There is no such thing as a perfection. However, small things can be done. So netball is doing the small thing, the one small thing. The next small thing that builds off from netball is the single most important commodity. And that media presence there, I actually felt so sorry for them.
Why? They were given a congratulation.
No. Come on. Not the media.
Not the guys that were mentioned?
Not the media.
House.
Not the media house. Mm-hmm. The athlete. I feel sorry for the athletes and the sports body. You see, the CEO of that media house, I worked under him, and he made a lovely comment. He gave a lovely ending ceremony speech there. And he said that the Wanderers versus, was it Blue Waters or Wanderers versus Correctional Services netball match reached something like 800,000 viewers around the world. Helmut, is it 800,000 or 80,000 viewers? I think it's 80,000. A little lower. Not as high.
Wait, is this the part where she's talking about, where he's talking about, this, you know, one lady that was watching from, is it Afghanistan?
Yeah. Yeah. So, the power of media is based upon what the sports codes have to understand, is that the media must bring the money. It's not for them to bring the money to the media. The media must bring the money.
How do they do that? The lady from the National Arts Council kept saying that.
Yeah.
I don't think I fully grasp that part.
Yes, Helmut. So you are at the event, at a festival.
Yeah.
But there's a camera there.
Yeah.
You don't know where that camera is broadcasting you to.
Yeah, no.
You don't know the viewers that they are, that they've advertised or promoted to view your presence.
Yeah.
So you are losing out. So someone is watching for free while the audience at the festival in front of you paid for a ticket to watch you live.
Okay, now I have to call those guys again.
Exactly.
I need to give them a new invoice like the number guys.
Exactly. So, I felt so sorry for people because people don't know these conversations.
Exactly.
They don't know. And if I even pitch this idea to any of the MPs, the youth MPs sitting there in that National Assembly, they don't know this level of conversation. Because they love their Man Uniteds, their Arsenals, their Liverpools, their Chelseas, whatever. They don't care about the local athletes here. Because they don't understand the advanced level of conversation that you need to engage in. You see, Hamid, there's a nice thing that comes about in everyday discussions in Namibia. You know, when you are not at the table, you can't have a say. You know the table where the big guys are sitting and talking? Yeah. You can't have a say. You can have all manner of ideas. But here's the worst thing also. There are some big tables that you don't want to be sitting at. Because you can literally see
what's wrong and you can't fix
what's
it
wrong
because
in
you're not
thinking.
Given the opportunity.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because, Hamoud, how do you have MPs, opposition MPs that get up and tell the Minister of Education or the Prime Minister, where are the jobs? Huh? It's not the government's role to make jobs. Once again, it's not the government's role to make jobs.
For that, I blame it on a lot of politicians because, after a lot of countries, if not all the countries gained their independence, they kept perpetuating that narrative that it's the government's responsibility to provide jobs through their campaigns. If you vote for me, I will create jobs. So you now have a lot of people that are stuck with that mentality that it's the government's sole responsibility to create jobs. And we yelled at at one of our former president when he told us to go and create jobs. But here's the thing. The way things works, as I have come to understand it, is that, the government lays the foundation and then they make all the policies these are the policies on which both the public and private sector must run on. Now the private sector, the public sector provides to some degree incentives, and we have done this before. To provide incentives to upcoming private sector individuals, so they reach a level where they can absorb a lot of citizens.
Yeah.
And now this is where you have your employment comes in. Of course, that comes with a big question of trickle down economy and its practicality. But expecting the government to do everything is just borderline impossible. Yeah. You can't expect everyone to work in the private sector. Like, how big will that private sector be? I think at the end of the day, you are going to have a lot of redundant roles if you have to employ everyone. Plus, the creating environment, the government creating the environment comes to the, also extends to the part of not everyone wants a job. Some people just want to run a business. Some people just want to do sport.
Mm.
The thing is, you have a lot of people that are interested in sport that are now stuck in 8-to-5 jobs that because they don't have that in the, they don't have the, an area where they can do what they do best.
Yeah.
Yeah. What they are good at is not commercialized. And you have someone that wants to just run, run a business, but now they're stuck in 8-to-5.
And here's the thing. Many of the athletes in the Netball League of Namibia are 8-to-5 people. Namibia Correctional Services, Ochozonchupa Nampol. There was another Nampol team. And there was another team as well. These guys have got jobs.
Yeah.
And then sometimes, they won't be able to get leave to go and play a match or tour out of town.
It's my shift.
To go play an out, an away match. But before we actually continue, guys, we're quickly going to take a short break and come back right after this. Namibia, are you ready to win big? Coca-Cola is giving away up to $1 million Namibian dollars in prizes. Every week, one lucky winner walks away with $10,000 cash. All you have to do is grab your favorite Coke, Fanta, Sprite, Stony, or Twist in 2 liters, 1.25 liters, or 600 ml bottles. Look under the yellow cap. Dial *142*45845# hashtag. Punch in your code. Follow the prompts to enter. And just like that, you could be our next big winner. Refresh, enjoy, and win with Coca-Cola. T's and C's apply. Go to the Coca-Cola social media pages to watch the video on how to enter the competition. Davichi University, where the 2026 applications are now open for the Faculty of Law, Commerce, and Education. For the programs, Diploma in Legal Studies, Level 6, Bachelor of Laws Honors, Bachelor of Science in Project Management Honors, Bachelor of Supply Chain Management Honors, Bachelor of Education in Senior Primary Education Honors for Math and Science for grades 4 to 7, and Bachelor of Education in Secondary Education Honors, Math and Science for the grades 8 to 12. Application fee is $230 Namibian. Application deadline is 30 November 2025. How to apply? Applications can be done online on our website at www.wu.edu.na. The application fee for all courses is $230 Namibian. Payments can be done at the bank, EFT, or swiping at our campuses. The proof of payment must be uploaded on the application form along with all other relevant documents. No ATM deposit receipts, meaning proof of payment in that format, will be accepted, and all foreign qualifications must be accompanied by an NQA evaluation report or certificate. For more information, please call 061-225-463 or 061-225-462. Davichi University, where everyone is an achiever. So, the 8 to 5 situation persists throughout.
Trying to balance it with your...
It persists. And Helmut, here's the thing. I am too sorry. I'm really sorry. There is money in advertising in this country. And some of these guys that show up at sports events, I'd actually encourage the sports administrators to ask them, hey, listen, you are making advertising money somewhere. You better start paying us. You better start paying us. Because people seem to forget they have the monthly DSTV accounts, but they don't see or ask the pinnacle basic question. How am I watching Steven Gerrard and I'm sitting here?
Why pay more when you can pay less at USAID? Dawn Roll-On deodorant for ladies and men, just $13.99. 400 milliliters of Sungel dishwashing liquid, just $16.99. 1 kilogram of Sunlight 5-in-1 hand washing powder, just $29.99. 500 milliliter tube of Personal Touch fabric softener, just $24.99. And 400 milliliters of Dawn hand and body cream, just $29.99. You save, I save, we all save. Say at you save.
Welcome back. We are now into business and economic segment time, but before we sign out, Steven Gerrard, go.
So, it is straightforward stuff. Namibia won't move anywhere fast. We won't be able to compete in the big circuits, leagues, competitions very easily unless we sort out
infrastructure.
Paying infrastructure and paying the athletes. And why is it taking two years to get a procurement contract for a bunch of engineers to just come and see what they must fix? That's the worst thing. The worst thing I've ever heard in my life.
You know, if it was someone else, I would, spend here the whole day explaining, but it's you, so I'll just say go easy.
That's what I'm saying. Uh-huh. No, but it's getting the procurement in order.
Yeah.
To go and invite the engineers to come. Uh-huh. You still have to invite the Helmut.
Protocol.
When Hende and I were last year at Independence Stadium with former Minister Agnes Chongolero, who had that ceremony about we are now getting this Boroni. We asked the question there, so
why is he taking?
Does it mean construction or does it mean just to look what must be repaired? No, to look what must be repaired. That is why we were invited to a press conference.
What the?
Yes, Helmut. It's taking Sirivendu 2 years to get an engineer to come and look at Sam Nyoma Stadium, who was
and
only,
then
the engineer was only revealed last week. The engineer was only revealed last week.
Who will go and look?
So I'd like to ask once again.
Looking is expensive, guys. What type of looking is this engineer going? Okay.
Do you see the level at which even the government and local authority officials don't take our sports seriously? And then everyone wonders why rugby and cricket said, no, we want to own our infrastructure.
Because of...
Their situation is not what you're cooking with.
Call it bureaucracy.
And the thing is that the rugby guys, they will have to replace some of the stands at one or other stage.
Hmm.
Some of the stands, that whole complex is more than 50 years old.
Ooh.
Or probably 50 years by now. There's some of that infrastructure would have to be replaced. So the next time they would want to invite whoever to come and do what, they will have to look at upgrading that infrastructure. I mean, it's just logic. If you want to upgrade yourself, you want to advance the sport in your country, you have to spend money. You have to spend money.
In whatever you does.
You have to spend money. And believe you me, it won't be a 50 million. Probably a couple hundred million. You have to spend money.
Translation, you want the ball rolling?
We are going to be sharing the Cricket World Cup in 2027 with South Africa and Zimbabwe.
Yeah.
Here. There are going to be international teams coming here in 2027.
Yeah.
Here. In Windhoek. So, we really have to up our game. We really have to spread out facility investment, and that the facility investment actually also supports the arts and culture scenes as well, because many sports fields cater to music concerts and music festivals as well. It has to play that dual facility role. So we have to be serious about things. And then people don't understand sometimes also why, what's the school's name, Windhoek High School, hosts a lot of music festivals as well on its sports field. Last time I checked 5 years back, you know, festivals were not supposed to be held at government school facilities. But things are being held there.
They have a very nice pitch.
Yeah, they have a very nice facility. Namibia's hockey, I think, plays at its AstroTurf at the back of the school.
Yeah.
In 2002, when I toured in South Africa, or 2001, guess how much an AstroTurf cost per day?
The water expenses.
The water bill was $1 million a day. That was in South Africa. That was at 2002 price levels. I don't know what the price level is now. I've heard that the technology had been improved on for the artificial
turf. And so is the price.
Yeah. So the price probably also might have adjusted or become worse or lower or manageable.
Throw in inflation. Oh, up. That's for sure.
Yeah. So you have situations like that. So sports facilities are not cheap. On that note, guys, I'm done. Helmut, on your side. You still wanted to add something?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel pity for those of you that are looking into being career politicians.
I don't want to be a career politician. You can sometimes just see the reality. And it's not a discussion about being a politician even. Politicians go and speak hope where there is no hope.
No, I'm saying that because of the direction that they were, the whole politics thing is, you know, the direction it's headed basically because, showing up with a microphone and saying things like I will create employment, it's going to get to the point where it's not going to cut it anymore. Because, well, questions are going to be thrown left, right and center that, ones that you will have to answer. And if you can't provide an answer to it, everyone will be like, what type of a leader are you? Because if you are a minister of this, we will expect you to at least know a thing or two, or at least be surrounded by people that know a thing or two about that particular discipline. Mm-hmm. And now, this is where I'm saying if you are looking into being a career politician, you really have to, you know, you have to look beyond There's an investor coming into this. We are mostly into the extractive industry. And this, unfortunate enough, is the whole continent. And now we are seeing people that are basically expert in, very good at a lot of, sport codes that are leaving the continent to go and basically take their skill somewhere else.
Yeah.
And they are thriving.
Yes,
have you seen the French national team? Now, you can blame the French, but you can also look at draw example on how they have basically, monetized the talent that, that can easily be found here.
Yeah.
Until Monday, Sunday when I'm playing both comedian and DJ.
And on my side, guys, I'll see you also on Sunday, same time, same place. Stay tuned for the rest of your programming after the break. On that note, enjoy the rest of your Friday.
Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do. From Namibia, Africa, and around the world, tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.